Today we're going to be doing the 48th Psalm, Perek Memchet, which you all know because this is the Shir Shel Yom of Monday. This is nothing less than a love song to Yerushalayim. And there are many varied opinions about when this was composed, and not only about the time of composition, but if it makes reference to any particular event. Because we will hear here about how all of these kings gathered together on Yerushalayim. And our question is, did they gather together for an invasion? Did they gather together to come and celebrate? Ibn Ezra begins by saying, Gadol ze ha-mizmor le-haskiro shefach Yerushalayim. This is a great mizmor, for it sings the praises of Jerusalem. But he proceeds furthermore to explain that Ahavas Hashem and Ahavas Yerushalayim seem to be related. That Yerushalayim is Ir Shechubra La Yachdav, not just because there's supposedly a Jerusalem down here and a Jerusalem above, but seems to be the place where God and His people are connected, where they commune together. And that the city itself reminds us of God's greatness and His praises. Particularly the praises that we sing when God has saved His city. So are we dealing here with some kind of an event that occurred of celebration after what looked like a calamitous danger to the city? There are those who argue that this was about the saving of Yerushalayim and Judea, Yehuda, during the days of Chizkiyahu. That would have been after the fall of the 10 tribes, when Sanherib led the invasion of the Assyrians around Jerusalem, which is very well recorded in various books of the Tanakh, in which they circled the city, and then lo and behold, Yeshayahu advises Chizkiyahu, sit tight, it looks like terrible, this siege is horrific. However, God will do this battle for us. Next thing you know, plague breaks out. And if you wonder whether plague can really break out, I suppose you've been reading the newspapers. Yeah, yeah. You can understand how plague suddenly breaks out and everybody goes into a panic, and they all fled, and the corpses were lying across across all of Eretz Israel, and that was the beginning of the end of the Assyrian kingdom. So, with one day, the greatest kingdom of all, that was posed a terrific threat and already caused damage to 5/6 of our nation, exiling them and destroying most of it, and here it goes. The only problem that we have here is that it tells us specifically on the 5th verse, Ki hinei hamlachim no'adu avru yachdav. Look, the kings have gathered together, have congregated, and passed through it together. What kings? We have one king of Assyria. We have his generals, but we don't have kings. So it makes no sense to speak of kings. Moreover, if it was during the days of Chizkiyahu, why would we be discussing Beruach Kadim Teshaber Oniot Tarshish? With a eastern wind, you will shatter the ships of Tarshish. First of all, we don't hear about any ships involved in that battle at all. This was a land war. What ships are we talking about? And besides that, we don't know where Tarshish is. So we have another issue here. There are some who argue, no, this is not about then. This is actually much earlier. Namely, the war of Yehoshaphat ben Asa. Shlomo HaMelech reigned between 965 and 928 BCE. His son Rechavam took over 928-911. After that, we've got a short reign of Aviah, 911 to 908. Then is Asa, 908 to 867, a substantial number of years. And then we have Yehoshaphat, who reigned between 867 and 846. That he ruled at the age of 35, when in the north, so we're talking way before the days of Chizkiyahu or Ahab or the destruction of the northern kingdom, the king at the north was Ahab. Ahab is otherwise known as Ahab, and he went and made an alliance Ahav himself persecuted and prevented people from coming to Yerushalayim. You remember that? Later on, Ahav's son is Ahaziah. Together, Yehoshaphat and Ahaziah sent ships to Tarshish and to Ophir to bring something that did not exist in Israel, namely gold. What we heard is that the ships shattered and sank in Etzion Gavel, today known as the port of Eilat, as the prophet had predicted that they would do. The two of them made an alliance, supposedly for the sake of trade. So we're going to wink, wink, and overlook your religious laxity and things you're doing up there, including idolatry, and preventing the northern tribes from coming to Yerushalayim. And they put up Bamot instead, and you'll remember that there was actually a golden calf up there, and what, gosh knows what. So this is, again, a terrible thing. Later on, he lives long enough, he's reigning 20 years, you see, he lives long enough to then join up with Jehoram, the son of Ahab, because when one brother died, the other one took over. That's what's known as Jeroboam the Second, in a war against Moab. Moab is what we would think of today as Transjordan. This was a coalition between Israel and Judea and Edom, the southern part of what we call Transjordan today. And they managed to overcome the threat of Moab, as Elisha the prophet had predicted that they would do. So do I have several kings coming together? I do. I've got the king of Israel, I've got the king of Judea, I've got the king of Edom fighting against. Did they all come then to Jerusalem to celebrate the great victory? And the answer is yes. The only problem is that the ships that were shattered were in Etzion Gavel, though they originally were sent also to Tarshish. So our question is, where's Tarshish? As I told you, Chazal looked at Yehoshaphat. Sometimes he did the right thing, sometimes he didn't do the right thing. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us that he was Mechabed Talmidei Chachomim, that he had great respect for the Talmidei Chachomim, and that he did the right thing in the eyes of God in terms of his own personal behavior. So Rashi and Radak and Sfono don't think that it is any of those at all, precisely because they don't see any kind of description of a major battle victory. It's not actually what's going on here. Instead, they describe this as a prophetic song to be written about the aftermath of Milchemet Gog Umagog. Did we already have Milchemet Gog Umagog? Was that World War II, as some Gedolim thought? Who knows? But what was predicted was that after Milchemet Gog Umagog, God will wreak judgment against all of the nations. The evil ones would fall. The halfway decent ones would come to recognize one God. All of them would come to Yerushalayim. Others yet tell us, no, this is a description of Shlomo HaMelech. And this would have been appropriate when he dedicated the buildings of Beit HaMikdash. You will remember that many kings heard about his great wisdom, and they all would come to Yerushalayim, including, of course, the inimitable Queen of Sheba, bearing gifts and standing in awe not only of the wisdom, but also of what was then a mighty imperial empire. Empire? Eretz Yisrael, for a very short while, we were both an economic as well as a military force, having essentially cut off most of our enemies, living in the greater Israel, from the area of Syria all the way down to Eilat, you understand? And having the borders almost that were promised to Abraham Avinu. Remember, Abraham Avinu was promised from the Euphrates to the Nile. So it's not quite, but most of those conquests were made by his father David and came to fruition in the life of Shlomo. Others argue, no, it's about David himself. Though there is no Beit HaMikdash yet, he drew the plans for that would be, that later on were used by his son. And he's the one that secured Israel's independence, full independence, and military security, you understand? And, of course, became famous throughout the world in the process. So, in a sense, we are singing his paean to him, if you like, by Bnei Korach. You will later on hear songs of Bnei Korach at a much later time. Al Naharot Bavel. Other songs that clearly indicate that these Bnei Korach are living at very sad times. That seems to be the consensus among the Rishonim. So they see this as a prophecy. Mm-hmm. It's saying, don't despair. So much has been destroyed. We have so little independence. We might be dispersed, so many of us, but there will come a day. And this is the song about what will come someday. There is no question that the praises of Yerushalayim here are because of the multitudes of people that are coming there, because of its political, religious, and spiritual importance, because of its beauty. And whoever writes this is clearly very proud and very optimistic about what the city will be, and became the inspiration for none other than Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, who was forecast in Sfarad and created a whole series of songs about Tzion and used the first lines, Yefe Nof Mesos Kol Haaretz, for some of his most famous songs about Yerushalayim. You remember that he's renowned for the song, Libi Bamizrach Ve'anochi Besof Ma'arav. My heart is in the east, though I am at the end of the west. Remember that when he lives in Spain, that was deemed as the end of the far west, presuming that if you get into the Atlantic Ocean, you swim off the end of the earth. So, right? That would be the end of the world. Bazak tells us that there are some things that you may not have noticed, and that is that there is mention of Yerushalayim to the four winds. We will hear in verse 2, Yarketei Tzafon, at the edges of the north, Beruach Kadim, in the 8th verse, which Kadim means east. When they speak about Yamin, Tzedek Mal'a Yeminecha, in the 11th verse, the right is often seen as south. Why? Because when you're looking eastward, your hand to the south. You got it. And finally, when it says Acharon, such as in verse 14, Shitu libchem lechela paskur menotzea leman tesapu ledor Acharon, to the last generation. Acharon, as far as he's concerned, is a hint to the last. The last meaning the west. The west, because Israel's borders are at the end, meaning the Mediterranean, and that's the west. He argues that it says in Tehillim on the 139th Psalm, Achor v'kadam saltani, you formed me, so you could say back and front, or east and west. So they argue that this is the cardinal points, and therefore makes Yerushalayim the tabor shel ha'olam, meaning the center of the world. Radak begins and tells us, no, Kol HaMizmor HaZeh V'Yemot HaMashiach, it hasn't actually happened yet. And yet Malbim comes with a completely different theory. He says, there was a great storm in the Middle East, in Mesopotamia. I actually went and looked it up, and I found out, yep, it's happened. Okay. It shattered mountain, created earthquake activity, as well as a major tsunami. Not when, several times. You know that Israel lies on a major fault. And when I put down the word earthquakes in the Middle East, oh my, I got several of them. In his theory, he doesn't tell us which one, but he clearly did his research. He says there was a major, major earthquake that led to tsunamis, floods. And those floods occurred not only because of the rising tide of the Mediterranean that flashed over the entire area of Syria, but because of the activities. In fact, there was flooding that occurred across the entire Fertile Crescent from the Euphrates and the Tigris rivers that went and flooded and wiped out entire cities, all brought on by a major earthquake. In case you doubt that, I think you can look at the pictures about what's going on in Mississippi. Go and check out about what's happening in a few other places. See how easily this occurs because of underground activity. Lying on this fault in a direct line was none other than Yerushalayim. And the odd thing is that Yerushalayim was not affected, while the area all around was. To the world at that time, this was a mark that there's a special hashgacha watching over Jerusalem, that God watches over Yerushalayim. He also says, if you want to understand another mizmor that actually does the same thing, please look at the 46th mizmor. He says it's about a major flood that occurred be'eretz Suria, which wiped out entire countries and cities in the entire areas with tremendous death tolls. We found out, I did look it up, I promise you, I did my research, and found out that the Western Peloponnese, which of course refers to the Greek Isles all the way to Turkey and the coastline of Syria, Lebanon, and Israel, was repeatedly impacted by earthquakes and tsunamis, which sometimes turned the fates of entire nations so that great empires fell, new ones arose in their place. And so he will interpret everything as the response of those who came to see how the city had survived it, though it lay on the fault itself. And therefore he begins as follows. Gadol Hashem umehulal meod be'ir Elokeinu har kodesho. God is great and greatly praised in the city of our God, in his holy mountain. All moderns would want to point out to you that all the ancient people made their temples on mountains, high places, which we call the Bamot, which were forbidden. There was only one place that was chosen, that was Har HaMoria. Why there? What was so special there? Well, the Malbim explained to you why. Rashi says, no, this is L'Atid Lavo. This is in the great future, when the Shekhinah will become apparent, Dafka in Yerushalayim. Then will God's name be greatly praised throughout the land amongst all nations. So says Rashi. Malbim says, no, they actually went through an experience in which Yerushalayim was saved, so impressing many people that they came to visit. You need to go to Yerushalayim on Shavuos and see how all the Koreans and Christians come to see this all. And they all see this as a fulfillment of great prophecy. Maybe we're actually living through this right now. What does he tell us about this place? Yifeh Nof, Mesos Kol Haaretz. In modern Hebrew, the word Nof means landscape. Chidot and Rashi treat it as the word Machoz, meaning an area, an environs. Malbim says that the word means aklim, beautiful climate. True. Can't argue with that one. Rashi gives you three possibilities, and that the word can mean the crown, yefenof, a beautiful crown of the land, a region, or, and he brings citations from other languages, Semitic languages, the beautiful bride. Mesos kol haaretz, the source of joy of the entire. Now the question is it the country or the earth? Depending on how you looked at it, right? If it is now the center of the universe, the world, Mesos kol haaretz. If it is just the center and the joy of our land, then it's limited. Depends on how you want to treat it. Haaretz. Hatzion is towards the northern part. True. Kiryat Melech Rav. The city of a great king. Is that great king Kutshabrichu? Or is that great king Yehoshaphat, Shlomo, David, or Melech HaMoshiach? Depending on who you're reading this from, right? Possibly Shlomo. Tholno says, of course, it's about God. It's the city of God. Rashi says, why is it this joy of the land? Shisham nitkapru avonot. Because that's the place where whatever it is that you were burdened with, whatever guilt you had, whatever sins you committed, that was the place where you brought your korbanot, and you came out of there joyful. Sforno says, no, people of the earth came to find there teachers of justice and true faith that would serve the whole world, one God. And therefore, he sees this as an issue of a universal values of justice and morality that would go for the whole world. Ah, then what does he tell us? Elokim be'armonoteha noda lemisgav. God, in her palaces, the city's palaces, comes to be known as the one on high. Malbi manages to explain this well. Rashi says, no, this will be later on. As if this is the place where one comes to know God. Sona will explain that. He says, yeah, in those palaces, people are going to learn Torah, teach Torah, and that's why God will be known to anybody who wants to come and learn. Malbim says, no, the strength of her palaces that withstood the great storms and earthquakes indicated that God is with this city and protects her. And that's how they knew him as its Misgav. And the word Misgav here, like Misgav Ladach, is the support. He is, as it were, her support. The one that holds her up. Look, the kings have gathered. They've passed through together. So Ladach takes the position, and Rashi concurs, in the wars of Gog and Magog, we were told in the prophets, Yechezkel is big on this, that they will gather together in an alliance, an unholy alliance, to try to destroy the city. Passing through it, that's the problem. If they gather together, why would you say that they passed through it together? Comes Sforno and says, no, the kings gathered together and passed through it because the heads of all the nations, hearing of the wisdom, either of Shlomo or of Melech HaMoshiach, or take your pick however you want it, have heard, Moshe Rabbeinu told them, the world will come to admire you. Eze Am Chacham V'Navon, what a great and understanding people you have, that your God is in your midst, that you will receive the Torah. What is your secret? They will come to look for and understand what is the secret of our survival against all historical odds. That's what they're going to do. And what will they do? Hemara'u! They came to see and they saw. Ken tamahu, and in the same fashion that they saw, so were they astonished. But at the same time, nivhalu, and they were afraid, nechpazu, and rushed. Now, if they came to attack and thought that they could do this in a slash, something scared the heck out of them. So at first, it was just astonishment. And that astonishment turned to terror. For those who see it as they came to learn from the wisdom, it's not an issue. Because they were afraid of their own immorality, and rushed to try to correct their ways. So it was more of being shaken spiritually. Rashi says, no, they saw God going out to do battle for his nation. I will point out to you, and you can look this up, of the great wonders that we saw in our time. When the soldiers took over the old city, in Givat HaTachmoshet and in other places, you had Jordanian soldiers just suddenly like turning around and fleeing, and maybe there was three guys in front of them. What did you see? And they report, now you're going to tell me that this is maybe the Arab imagination, or maybe they actually saw something. They saw this onslaught of thousands of soldiers that were angels with wings flying at them. Oh my. And they recorded this at the time. Maybe they saw more than what we understand that they saw. Maybe we ourselves are skeptics to understand that it wasn't their wild imagination. that they actually saw something. So Ra'u, Tamahu, and then Nivhalu, and did what? Turn around and fled. And therefore, says Radak, they came to destroy Yerushalayim and to wipe out all of the Jewish settlers therein, until they saw and were astonished and terrified and fled. Yechezkel, in the 38th chapter, and I gave you one just small thing, predicts this as something that will happen in Melchemet Gog u'Magog, where it tells you as follows, I will go to battle and I will judge him. Plague. U'bedam v'geshem shotef. And with blood and pouring rain, and it's not clear if it's both the blood that's pouring or the rain that's pouring. Ve'avnei al gabish, you know this, brimstone, sulfur rocks, esh ve'gofrit amtir alav, fire and sulfur, I will rain down on him. By the way, that's what happens in a volcano. Okay? Ve'al agafav, and on all of his troops, ve'al amim harabim asheriton, on the nations that come together with him, whoever him is, Gog, leading other nations in a battle against Jerusalem. That's where the idea of fire and brimstone comes from. Solno says, no, they came out shocked, astounding for the wisdom of this nation, for what it can do, and feared that the Jew, with his wisdom, can conquer the entire world. Ah, then what will happen? They tremble. The trembling took over them there. Chil kayoleda, cramps. Like a woman in labor. Beruach kadim. And when a eastern wind, tishaber oniyot Tarshish, when an eastern wind came and shattered the ships of Tarshish. So where is Tarshish? Targum Yonatan says it's Carthage. Carthage is in northern Africa, founded by, it was by the Phoenicians as well, and by Romans. It was actually a Roman city, northern Africa, near Libya, right? Okay. Yosef ben Matityahu, otherwise known as Josephus, right, says Tarsus is in southern Turkey. Malbin says Tartasus is in the Iberian Islands in Spain. Take your pick. But if this eastern wind, according to him, was so wild and the tsunami so strong that it broke the ships, to him it was the ships that were coming from the Iberian Isles going towards Israel, you understand? And there they were shattered. So they were ships coming from Tarshish. To others, it's the ships that were in the Aegean. Radak, he doesn't want to say that this is an actual event. He says the people that came to attack Jerusalem fled as if a wind from the east had come to shatter them, as it once had shattered the ships of Tarshish. And without necessarily saying, trying to put the two events together, simply using that as it were as a metaphor, you'll remember that Yonah was supposed to go to Tarshish, and he ends up in Nineveh, which would account for why Yosef ben Matityahu would tell you southern Turkey, because that would be closer to that area. You understand? Okay, enough said. And now comes the question, who says the next line, which is why I separated it for you. Kasher shamanu, please notice that suddenly the voice changes. It becomes first person. As we heard, so we saw. Who's saying this? Isn't this being said by the kings that came, who saw and were astonished? They would declare this. Be'il Hashem tzvakot, in the city of Hashem. Radak says, on that day when Gog and Magog fall, the world will say, and the Jews will say, as we heard, so we live to see. Sfona, who tells you that the people came to visit and see the greatness of Jerusalem, they would then report to the world, what we heard is what we saw. It was no exaggeration. He is God of Tzivot ha'amim v'tzivot ha'melachim. He is the God in charge of the armies of other nations and the armies of angels. He is in charge of heaven and earth. They think that they're following the rules and the orders of their generals. They don't understand that they're puppets being pulled by the Ribono Shel Olam. That's why he's Hashem Tzvakot. Ono says, as we heard in the Torah. What does it say in the Torah? In Devarim, where it gives us the blessings and the curses, it tells us, Unetancha Hashem Elokecha Elyon al kol goyei haaretz. God will make you superior amongst all the nations of the earth. Ken ra'inu, so we saw, Beyameinu, in our days. What days were those? Either in the days of David, or in the days of Shlomo, or Mirtz Hashem, in the days of Melech HaMashiach. To Malbim, no, this is the kings, alien kings of other nations will come back and report to their people. Kashel Shamanu, Ken Ra'inu, what we heard about Jerusalem, that's exactly what we actually saw. And what did we see? We saw how God had spared the city while all the area around it was destroyed, and clearly proving that his hashgacha and his shechina rests on it. Others tell us, no, this is what kings will say, to come back and say, yeah, it is as beautiful as you say it is. There's wise people just as you say it is, and that they would have said it then and will say it in Mirtz Hashem in the future. And what will they then say, and who reads the next part? I argue that this is being said by the Jews, to echo what the Goyim would have said. Diminu Elokim Chasdecha. Diminu, dimyon means imagination. We imagined, we tried to conceive, we thought. Others say it means we hoped. We imagined, God, what your chesed would be like when you would again rest in your temple. We imagined your loving kindness, says Ibn Ezra, filling your temple when the Shechina was there and when the Shechina and Mirtz Hashem will come back there. Sona says we can only imagine, in light of the miracles that we witnessed, what your loving kindness will be like in the future when we finally come to rest in your Heichal. Hitherto, says Malbim, we could only conceive of your love. But now, we saw it. Kishimcha Elokim, like your name, God, ken tehilatcha, such as your praise. You are just what we call you. Al katzvei aretz, to the edges of the earth. Tzedek, mal'a yiminecha, your right hand is filled with justice. Not merely chesed. Because chesed might imply that you would forgive the most horrific atrocities. But when we saw not only your loving kindness to us, but also the fact that you wreak justice against those that committed such horrible acts against us, that's when we saw that you are like your name. What name is that? Elokim, Midas Hadin. It is not merely din without chesed. It is din that it seeks justice. Tzedek yimincha, your right hand is all about justice. And that's why we ask God, Hashem yivkom damo, to see the vindication as well as God's vengeance against our worst enemies. That was why we would sing those. We would see that to the edges of the earth. Yismach ha'tzion, so the Mount Zion can rejoice. Tagelna bnot Yehuda. They can go out there, the daughters of Yehuda. Some say daughters of Yehuda is that there is a city, Ir, Ve'em, and she is like a mother, metropolitan, is the mother. And the surrounding cities are called the Banot, the daughters, Bnot Yehuda. Others say, no, it means just that. Because in Eicha he describes how the girls were violated. You understand? Now he can talk about them dancing, rejoicing, Bnot Yehuda. Why? Leman Mishpatecha. For the sake of your laws. your laws. That's why they can rejoice, because to simply be saved and not see justice done would not be sufficient. So now comes a call, and the question is to whom your poet is calling. To others, to come do what? Is it to other nations? Is it to his people? Or both? Sobu Tzion v'hakifuha. Circle the Tzion. Make hakosis around it. Sifu migdaleha. Not tell us. Count her towers. Come look at it. Shitu librem lechela. Pay attention to chela. Chela can mean chel, it means armies, right? Her strength. Or chela v'choma can mean her walls. Look at the walls. Pasgu amenoteha. Climb up, all the way up into her palaces. Leman tesapu ledor acharon. So that you will have a chance to tell it to the last generation. Tell your children what you saw. Is he telling this to the goyim who came to visit the city? Go on, look around. Tell it to others. And what will you tell them? This is God. It's not that the city is God. It's the place where God's presence is felt and seen and becomes tangible. Elokeinu is our God. Olam va'ed, forevermore. Hu yenahagenu, he will lead us. Almut. Almut is a problem. What does the word mean? Malbim says he's calling on all other nations to understand the eternity of this city, its beauty, and tell it to all others that God watches it. It's invincible. Maze almut. Some say forever. It means over death. Over death, beyond death. Hence eternal. Almut, above death. Others say almut comes from the word alem, or olam, the mysterious. Ne'elam. But simply the way it's written with a makaf, it means overcoming, vanquishing death.